In the past decade, the global refugee crisis has more than doubled, surpassing the 100 million mark for total displacement. This means that over 1.2% of the global population has been forced to leave their homes. And these include refugees, internally displaced people, and asylum seekers. But is life better after fleeing their home country? And what happens to the host country that opens its doors to refugees? I'm Christy Ai, and you're watching The Cost of Everything, where today we're going to be looking at the movement of displaced refugees worldwide and how this affects them as well as the local population. Never in history have we ever witnessed there being 100 million displaced people. And there is absolutely no aid system that will ever be able to support 100 million people in need without more resources. And unfortunately, the current system is extremely inefficient, as it costs far more to settle refugees in a Western nation than it does to support accommodations and camps for refugees as close as possible to their homes. Because by settling refugees in the West, we are using the limited funds in the least efficient way, so that many who cannot immigrate suffer in underfunded and underserved camps. Over 600,000 people applied for asylum in the EU in 2021. Syrians, Afghans, and Iraqis logged the most applications for asylum, together accounting for almost 40% of all applications in the EU member states, with Syria being the biggest. In 2021, Germany received over 30% of asylum applicants in the EU, followed by France, Spain, Italy, and Austria. Together, these five member states received almost 3/4 of all asylum applications in the EU. Germany is the second largest host community in the world, nearly doubling its refugee population in less than a year with the escalation of the conflict in Ukraine. It now hosts over 2.2 million refugees, including over 875,000 Ukrainian refugees, 665,000 Syrian refugees, as well as over 183,000 refugees from Afghanistan and 151,000 from Iraq. In the past decade, the global refugee population has more than doubled. In 2022, we exceeded 30 million refugees. Germany has maintained high levels of support for accepting refugees despite the concerns about immigration. And Germany does not have the law enforcement necessary to keep Germans or refugees safe. Many would argue that Germany has reached the breaking point with the amount of stress refugees and migrants have placed on society. Germany needs to craft laws to cope with the situation and train additional enforcement, social workers, and staff to be able to sort out economic migrants from the refugees and process asylum claims before accepting more refugees. In the UK, asylum seekers are generally barred from work until they have attained refugee status. If they do not receive an initial decision on their asylum claims within 12 months, they can only apply to certain jobs like nurses, social workers, and engineers. Food poverty is a big consequence as prices rise to run a basic household, and the burden of taking refugees is draining the European economies. Crime rate is up, drug usage is up, and many citizens are getting frustrated. Refugees also have impacts and pressures on clean water, energy, and the environment. And the situation is turning into a permanent reality and has produced a negative attitude in many ordinary Europeans, seeing them as a burden on the local economy. Many Syrian refugees failed to assimilate into European societies, though it is no fault of their own. How are Syrians supposed to integrate with the population that lives there when they can't work because they don't know the language or the customs and they don't know anyone? The only way to survive in their new environment is to turn to crime to survive and support their families. Another essential problem that refugees face is housing. Most refugees are sent to live in places far away from cities or in the countryside. Medical services and healthcare are generally unaffordable to many who fall sick. And cultural differences is perhaps one of the most complicated challenges that refugees face, as they must learn to submit to it and accept it in order to become a genuine part of the refugee hosting country that they now live in. Racism and prejudice are normal outcomes of the language barrier and cultural differences between the local population and the refugee families. The worst happens in schools, medical facilities, healthcare centers, and social service centers when a refugee applies to work, even when they have all the experiences and abilities. Refugees are also exempted from the rights that are given by the state to its people, like enjoying the right of minimum standard of living and security, and they're unfortunately often exploited. So now let's bring in Nabil Al-Tikitri, professor of Middle East history at University of Mary Washington. So Nabil, what is the most challenging thing for refugees to face? What about for the host country?
Well, sometimes the biggest issue is numbers, but otherwise, I think the biggest issue for refugees would be acclimating to a new society and getting used to the reality that they have to reinvent their lives entirely from the ground up the moment they arrive in a very strange and alien culture to their own. And for the host societies, it's sort of the similar, but in reverse. It can be very hard to successfully, seamlessly integrate the refugees into the culture, especially if the culture is not historically welcoming or unsure what to do with them. So that varies from country to country, though.
And are there things that can be done to alleviate this refugee crisis, as it seems like this is a problem with no viable solution?
Well, the areas that I know best, namely Iraq, Iran, and the Middle East, are the most vulnerable to climate change. There's some list of the most vulnerable countries, and of the top five, Iraq and Iran are two out of the top five. And they've already experienced something like 55 degree summers and 55 degree Celsius summers, which in Fahrenheit is I don't know, something like 110 plus degrees. And humanity cannot exist in 110 degrees without being indoors, without being in the water, you know, all kinds of temporary situations. But you cannot exist like that long term. And even if you're indoors with air conditioning, it's not really a long-term solution, because air conditioning itself is driven by energy and driven by and is itself driving climate change. So in those two examples, it's getting much worse. But they're not the only two. I would also observe or argue that the Sahel in Central Africa, between Central and Northern Africa, has been dealing with sort of an agricultural crisis for as long as I can remember, and they're not likely to bode well with climate change, meaning that it's probably going to accelerate the desertification, unless there's something I haven't heard, because I have heard that there's a potential possible positive impact of climate change for some of the Middle East that is tied together with the shifting of the jet stream in the Atlantic, so that it may happen that it actually starts to rain in the Middle East due to the shifting jet stream. But aside from that one potential positive, which I'm not sure is even going to be true, and I'm not sure I understood it correctly, it seems like it's mostly very negative. It's certainly negative for Iraq, Iran, and probably for the Sahel as well.
As the saying really goes, one rotten apple spoils a bunch, and refugees are now being looked down on because they bring crime and violence to once peaceful neighborhoods. So is there any truth to this, and how much more crime has there been since countries have opened their doors to refugees? Are there stats on this?
I do not know the exact statistics, and I am very skeptical that the statistics are accurate, because when those statistics like that data point are measured, they're almost always measured in the context of trying to approve anti-refugee policies, anti-migration policies. So I don't actually trust them. I think they're sometimes inaccurate, and maybe sometimes they are accurate. Now, the idea of one rotten apple spoiling the whole barrel, there is something to that idea, at least in terms of perception, in that a lot of the refugee populations will have something go wrong, either vis-a-vis between them and the state, you know, the host country's state, or between them and the host country society, and then it gets blown out of proportion, and it becomes this idea that the society is under threat in crisis. I saw this myself about 6-7 years ago when, after working in the Mediterranean with refugees and migrants trying to cross the Mediterranean, immediately after that, like the very next year, we're talking 2015 into 2016, there were all these claims that crime had gone up in places like Paris, Berlin, and they would, in the things that I saw on the internet, they would intersplice a video of sort of random chaos and then run a slogan saying crime has shot up. Well, now you fast forward to 2023, nobody's talking about it. At least they're not talking about that particular wave of refugees, which was massive. It was well over 1 million people that made it to Europe. Nobody's talking about the crime. Instead, you hear a much deeper story about how some of those refugees have done quite well. They've, in effect, become activists in Germany. They've learned German. They're working for the betterment of German society and their own populations at the same time. And as far as I understand, it's mostly a positive story. But you'll still hear these one apple, you know, spoiling the rest of the barrel type of stories where things do or things are said to be in crisis. And I just don't believe that to be the case.
Have these cities now been overpopulated after opening themselves to all the refugees? And does this decrease the quality of life for the original inhabitants?
Population has grown. And there I would refer to my own society. In other words, Virginia, from Fredericksburg, Virginia, up to Northern Virginia, the population is growing. And some of that population is refugee population. But I don't think the refugee population is the primary driver of the population growth. What's primarily driving it is urbanization and the search for corporate jobs and the successful search for corporate jobs like Amazon HQ2 up in Northern Virginia. And in effect, the state government is trying to attract all of this economic activity, which they've successfully done, and that is driving population growth. So at least in my surroundings in Virginia, there is population growth, but I don't think it's the refugees. I think there may be 5 to 10% of the total. The 80 to 90% of the total is coming from other parts of the United States, which aren't doing very well, and relatively speaking. Now, another point about the idea that they're causing population growth and making life worse for the host community, I would offer a counter vision, and that is that there are many examples up until now where there are either rural or more often urban environments where the neighborhood has, in effect, been a disaster for the last 40 years, and refugees come in and they make that neighborhood thrive. That is happening far more frequently than having situations where refugees are causing the population to boom, which is pushing out host community individuals. It's much more frequently the case that underinvested, left behind communities in places like Newark, New Jersey, or, you know, Detroit, Michigan, or just pick any city that doesn't sound like it's doing very well. Certain neighborhoods in those cities are thriving now because of refugee populations.
Professor Nabil Al-Tikriti will be joining us right after the break. While many countries have received a large number of refugees year after year, many countries have received almost none. So what are these countries doing to prevent refugees from coming into their country? We'll have more after the break.
really thought that we were gonna die.
I saw the blood, the bullets, I saw everything.
And I crawled all the way to the right side of the room, and then I hid behind the desk.
Columbine happened 2 years before I was even born. And this has happened again and again and again and again and again. Because people continue to stick with the system.
I sent my kids to school that day like any other day, and only one of them came home.
Basically, we want to make sure that certain weapons that are just too dangerous for regular civilians shouldn't be in the hands of those people.
If we weren't safe at school, we're safe nowhere.
It's just a start, really.
Welcome back to The Cost of Everything. While many countries have received a large number of refugees year after year, many countries have received almost none and are doing everything they can to prevent refugees from coming into their country. Japan accepts the least number of refugees for a major country and economy, as they say it must look after its own before allowing refugees. Japan also wants to preserve their ancient culture and fear that adding refugees or migrants to their population will affect their culture. Other countries who have strict policies on refugees include Hungary, South Korea, Saudi Arabia, and Qatar. Other countries like Saudi Arabia are similar, being rich in oil, is at a similar level to Japan. In Western Europe, Portugal has received the fewest refugees at 0.03%. These countries have been quite peaceful in recent years compared to the route Sweden, Belgium, Germany, and the UK are taking, and they are now experiencing higher rates of crime. In Italy, authorities have increasingly refused to allow boats with asylum seekers to dock in their ports. However, once the conflict broke out in Ukraine, many European countries that have been the most negative about receiving refugees from outside Europe, such as Poland, Hungary, and Slovakia, they actually became the largest recipient for Ukrainian refugees. The vast majority have fled to Poland, which now houses almost 1.2 million refugees. More than 6 million have been displaced by the conflict in Ukraine. Estimates are that hosting and integrating Ukrainian refugees could cost host nations an estimated $30 billion in just the first year alone. People have also pointed out that Ukrainian refugees have generally been well received, which contrasted with the way refugees from other parts of the world are treated. And this should not be ignored, as the different treatment received by refugees from Ukraine compared to those from countries outside of Europe is in some extent rooted in xenophobia and opposition to Muslim immigration. This is particularly noticeable in Poland, where fences were being erected on the border with Belarus pushing asylum seekers from the Middle East and Africa back, while Ukrainians are being welcomed with open arms. And for more, let's bring in again Nabil Al-Tikriti, professor of Middle East history at the University of Mary Washington. So, professor, obviously it is the humanitarian thing to do and the right thing to do, but are there any benefits to accepting mass refugees, or are the countries who accept refugees now just struggling with the extra burden on society?
I think that's absolutely accurate. There was all of this hemming and hawing when the Syrian refugees originally came in 2015. And again, that was a very large movement. It was over a million. But now, these years later, they're mostly doing very well. And they were not treated well by many players, including other East European states that tried to prevent their transportation over their territory when they were just trying to get to Germany. And a more recent example that plays into the Ukrainian crisis directly is the example that happened like 2 or 3 months before the launch of the Russia-Ukraine war. And that was a number of refugees were in Belarus trying to get to Poland in what I think was November, December of 2021. It was a month or two before the invasion. And in that case, it was only a matter of a few dozen or maybe a few hundred refugees who were largely Iraqi Kurds, from what I remember. And the Poles, the Polish government, was doing everything it could to keep them away from Poland, because once they reached Poland, they could claim asylum. So they didn't use live ammunition, to the Poles' credit. They used water cannon beatings, pushbacks from the wall, from the fence, and they push them back into Belarus. And eventually, those refugees who were trying to make it to the EU were pushed back into Belarus, and I'm not sure what happened to them. Now, not 6 weeks after that, or maybe a couple of months after that, Russia launched the invasion of Ukraine, and it was all open arms. Everybody was doing anything they could for the Ukrainian refugees all over the world. Now, I don't have anything against Ukrainian refugees. I think they deserve a fair shake and a chance to live safely and securely. But I would argue that so do Syrians, and so do Iraqi Kurds, and so do Lebanese, and so do Afghans. It's not just something that is there for Ukrainian refugees. It's something that should be there for any refugee.
There are many people criticizing their country that have been more open to Ukrainian refugees than Syrian refugees because they are white. What do you make of this situation?
And another historical point, if I may, the historical point, and this is kind of a footnote to history, it's not something that's extremely famous, but in World War II, there were several thousand Polish refugees who took refuge in Iran. This story has always intrigued me because I don't know how they got from point A to point B or really how many there were, but it was a sizable number. And they were welcomed with open arms, as far as the story goes, in Iran. And then after the war, they returned to Poland. Again, the details escape me, and it's a fascinating story. But it can show that in the reverse, at least in that one occasion, they were provided refuge.
Do you think these refugees will ever return to their home country, or does it look like a permanent migration?
Well, on that note, I would point to the Vietnamese in the United States. So in 1975, there was this tidal wave of Vietnamese refugees fleeing Southeast Asia. So there weren't just Vietnamese. There were Thais, Cambodians, Laotians, etc. And this tidal wave of Southeast Asians ended up in the U.S., primarily in California, but not only. And I grew up in New Orleans, and a lot of those Vietnamese ended up in southern Louisiana, which in a way was logical because they're going from a Catholic society to a Catholic society. And a lot of them were South Vietnamese who were Catholic. And they were going from a fishing society to a fishing society. And back in the 1970s, again, I was a child back then, but I distinctly remember that there were like fist fights between Cajun fishermen and Vietnamese fishermen. And I distinctly remember that the Vietnamese held all the low-wage jobs in the supermarkets and gas stations in the mid-70s. Now, you fast forward 50 years later, and the representative from New Orleans East, which is where most of the Vietnamese live, is a Vietnamese-American. And they've added things to New Orleans culture that's very positive. For example, I don't know if anyone in the audience is familiar with king cakes, but it's a big thing in New Orleans around Mardi Gras to have a king cake, which is a type of pastry with a baby in the middle. Well, when I was growing up, the king cakes were inedible. There was this company called McKenzie's that would make it and sprinkle some powdered sugar on top. It was terrible, always stale, just awful. Well, the Vietnamese have reinvented the king cake. And in New Orleans now, the best king cake in the entire city comes out of a Vietnamese bakery in New Orleans East. And that community is thriving. And they're reinventing even New Orleans culture. And after Katrina, that community was devastated by Katrina. I mean, totally leveled. And they were back within a year because they helped each other get through the destruction financially. They helped each other. And they're still thriving. That is an example of what can happen on a positive level with even a refugee population. Just wait, continue to have your education, let them work an honest job. 50 years later, everything's much, much better.
Thank you so much, Professor, for all your time today. There are very few winners when it comes to global catastrophes that involve so many displaced people. While the refugees are the biggest losers who have lost everything, their homes, their way of life, their country, the neighboring countries are also feeling the effects as well, having to receive millions of refugees. Many people feel overwhelmed by the numbers and see people moving across the borders. But the people are not the problem here. Rather, the causes that drive families and individuals to cross borders is the real problem, whether that be war, persecution, human rights violations, or any other crisis. Hosting refugees is just a short-sighted solution and unrealistic that is unsustainable in the long run. I'm Christy Eye. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you right back here next time on The Cost of Everything.